You've finally broken loose from work. Three friends, one tea time, and then the text. Honey, there's water in the basement. Not exactly how you pictured your Saturday. That's when you call us, Cincinnati Insurance. We always answer the call, because real protection means showing up, even when things are in the rough. Cincinnati Insurance. Let us make your bad day better. Find an agent at CINFIN.com. You've finally broken loose from work. Three friends, one tea time, and then the text. Honey, there's water in the basement. Not exactly how you pictured your Saturday. That's when you call us, Cincinnati Insurance. We always answer the call, because real protection means showing up, even when things are in the rough. Cincinnati Insurance. Let us make your bad day better. Find an agent at CINFIN.com.
Welcome to the Stay Ready Real Estate Podcast, where we stay ready so you don't have to get ready. My name is Emeka, and I'll be interviewing a variety of professionals in the real estate industry to help you get 1% closer to your goal of buying your next real estate investment. At the end of the podcast, I'll give three actionable steps that you can do today to get to that goal. My goal with this podcast is to let the world know that regular people like you and me buy real estate to build wealth. Today, we have Bailey Kramer. Bailey is a real estate investor and entrepreneur. Bailey uncovered his passion for real estate early in his life and bought his first investment property at just 20 years old. Since then, Bailey has focused on growing his portfolio of long-term rentals and short-term rentals. Bailey also founded his own co-hosting company and manages 11 Airbnb properties in 5 different states. In his free time, Bailey enjoys traveling, playing sports, and eating delicious food. Let's listen to Bailey. All right, Bailey, can you tell the world a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, for sure. So my name is Bailey, and I am full-time in real estate. So I do a couple different things. I manage Airbnbs, so I call that co-hosting, and then I also buy Airbnbs. And we can get more into it, but I do something called midterm rentals and just your traditional Airbnb short-term rental style. So those are kind of the two main things that I do in the real estate world.
No, amazing, amazing. You look kind of young. You look maybe in your 20s. So when did you get started?
Yeah, right now I'm 23. And I started learning about this whole real estate thing when I was in college. And that's actually when I bought my first property and started off the business, if you will. So yeah, in college.
No, cool. So you said you learned about it in college. Were you actively looking into real estate, or were you looking for like a side hustle, or what got you into it in college?
Yeah, literally just like I knew I was always interested in business and in entrepreneurship and starting my own business. Like I always knew that. And when I went to college, I literally made a video, like right when my parents moved me in, right when they left, I propped up my phone on the wall. I made a little video that was basically like, all right, I'm here to learn about something so that I can essentially create my own business and not have to get a 9-to-5 job. Like that was like literally like the video that I made the second my parents left. So I always knew it was ingrained that I was going to find something. And then basically, like, my first year went by, and that year, I didn't really follow the plan too much, because I just, like, joined a fraternity, had some fun, all that stuff, and then sophomore year rolled around, I'm like, all right, it's time to buckle down. So I was pretty much just looking online, like, to learn about, like, personal finance and just, like, business in general, and that's when Rich Dad Poor Dad came around, and I read a couple books before then, but then when I read Rich Dad Poor Dad, and he was talking about real estate, and then I looked up like how much is Robert Kiyosaki worth, and it was like hundreds of millions of dollars. I was like, oh my god, found the answer has been found, real estate it is. So that was like my introduction to what real estate investing even was.
No, amazing. And I got my first single family home. It was a burr out like a year after college, and I did everything alone, and I found that deal through a realtor and I went on Zillow. But you're in college, so you have the frat, you have all these distractions. So can you talk a little bit about how you got your first deal and the steps towards that?
Totally. So basically, like, after I read Rich Dad Poor Dad, I was like, all right, I'm all in. Like, how can I get my first property as fast as possible? Just started following people on social media, listening to all the podcasts. Went down a million different rabbit holes, like, oh, I want to buy multifamily, oh, I want to fix and flip, oh, I want to do this, I want to do this. So fast forward, like, it wasn't from when I read Rich Dad Poor Dad, it took me like a year and a few months when I actually bought my first property. So it wasn't overnight. But what happened was I just started networking as well with a ton of different people, basically that I met in either Facebook groups or Bigger Pockets. And just through connecting with people and then getting introduced to other people and then just going down a network rabbit hole, I met the guys at MIH, like Marco and those guys, and joined their mastermind, and then met people through there that I kind of just started to like add value to and help out, whether that was like underwriting, calling brokers, you name it. I was just kind of doing it, and nothing really clicked until I continued to do it, finally found somebody that needed some help finding deals. So basically like we were cold calling and cold texting, and found some owner who needed to sell a property, and we basically took it down and did a fix and flip on it. And we brought in another mastermind member who came in with the money. I came in with basically like some of the hustle to find the deal and then putting the actual work in. And then the partner at the time came in with like more experience and kind of just putting everything together.
No, amazing. So it sounded like that team really helped. You think you could have did it alone, or that team was kind of what accelerated everything?
Yeah, I definitely could not have done that alone. Like, I wouldn't have even known where to start, to be honest. Like, there's so many pieces to it, and I honestly would have no idea where to start, or I wouldn't have known if it was even a good deal. I wouldn't have known how much money it needed. I wouldn't have known anything, to be honest with you.
No, that's cool, and that's just the first deal. So can you tell the world a little bit about what's your portfolio now?
Yeah, so essentially after that first deal, I scaled up kind of using the similar strategy, except holding a couple properties. I mean, similar strategy as in like partnering with other people. So scaled that to 6 properties. So now it was like my junior year of college, roughly, with 6 properties. I sold 2 of them though. So I had 2 long-term rentals, 2 short-term rentals. Then I think it was senior year. I might be getting the years mixed up.
No worries.
But I think end of senior year, I ended up selling the 4 properties I held. And then since then, which has been like a year and a half, roughly, give or take, I've bought 3 properties, just myself, no partners. 2 of them are long-term rental, Both of, they're all short-term and mid-term rentals. 2 of them are single families, and then 1 of them is a triplex. So that's kind of my portfolio right now.
No, amazing. Can you tell the audience a little bit about the differences of short-term, mid-term, and long-term rentals, and what you see as the biggest benefit or downfall for each one?
Totally. So long-term rentals is like your classic. You put a tenant in there for 12 months, and it doesn't come furnished, and they bring in their own furniture, and that's that. Very standard. The biggest downside that I see to long-term rentals, especially with properties that people are buying in today's day, is it's very hard to make the numbers work, from at least what I've seen. So it's the strategy that's going to bring in the least amount of money versus short-term or mid-term for the most part, obviously depending on the deal. But that's kind of the biggest downside. The biggest upside, I would say, is it's most friendly with the banks. Like, financing can get a little bit tricky with short-term and mid-term rentals, and the stability with the long-term rentals, that's another big pro. On the other complete opposite end is short-term rentals. This is kind of what everyone thinks of like as vacation rentals. So this could be your property by the beach, by wherever, where people are coming, college town, where people are coming for the weekend, and, you know, less than 7 night stays. Biggest pro to that is, in theory, it can make the most amount of money because you're charging on a nightly rate versus a monthly rate. So you're theoretically going to make a lot more money. I'd say biggest downside has been definitely like competition has increased in a lot of places, restrictions and regulations in certain places. And then there are a lot of expenses. I know like with your property, like there were a lot more expenses with running a short-term operation than a long-term. So that's like another hidden thing for a lot of people. And then right in the middle of the short-term and the long-term is kind of where I'm most focusing right now, is the midterm game. So it essentially, what that means is it's people staying for typically at least 30 days, but really it's right around 3 months to 6 months. And the typical guest who's doing that could be either a traveling nurse, it could be a family who, let's just say their house has a fire or flood and they need somewhere to go. An insurance company will pay for them to live at your house for, you know, for one of your rental properties for 3 or 6 months, furnished up. So I like that because you get the upside of being able to maximize revenue, and you get, so that's kind of like the short-term side, but you also get the stability, not perfectly as if it were a long-term rental, but if someone's in there for 6 months, also paying a premium rent, it's the best of both worlds there. The biggest downside is, I would say, the clientele that we're attracting with the midterm rentals. It's not as easy as like, hey, let's just lower the price and we can get someone in today. Like if we needed to lower the price for a short-term rental and just fill it up, we could. With the midterm rental, it's not necessarily like always price-driven. A lot of times it's supply and demand, and that's completely out of your control. I'd say that's like the biggest downside with the midterm rentals.
No, cool. And I'm sure a lot of people are interested in what you just said about midterm rentals. And one thing that kind of piqued my interest is you said sometimes insurance companies will place these people in these kinds of homes. So are you working with these insurance companies? Are you actively reaching out to insurance companies or different kind of vendors to have more of a flow of people who come in?
Yeah, so there's like the insurance companies like the State Farms, Geico, and I don't even know if they do home. I don't know, whatever your home insurance companies are, they essentially, we don't reach out to them directly because how it works is there's like a third party company that you have to go through. You can't, at least from what I've seen, there's no possible way to cut it. It doesn't even affect us, the middleman, but there's a middleman. And these are like relocation companies. So when the insurance company gets a claim from somebody who says, hey, I just lost my house, I need somewhere to go, they're going to say, okay, we're going to connect you with our relocation company. This is essentially a third party company that will help those families find housing. And then I connect with those relocation companies to say, hey, do you have anybody who needs housing? Hey, do you have anybody who needs housing? And then they'll also, the relocation companies, they have their own internal database, kind of like on Airbnb, how we post our listing on there. Same kind of thing. We post our listing with these relocation companies, and then they can also find us on sites like Furnish Finder, Zillow, Airbnb, sometimes Vrbo, you name it, like they'll find us as well.
No, I gotcha. And it seems like you have your kind of niche right now, right? You're looking for single to small multifamily homes for your short-term, mid-term. It doesn't really seem like you'd like the long-term too much right now, but so short-term and mid-term. So is that going to be your main focus throughout the years, or will you ever transition to something else per se, like large multifamily?
Yeah, so right now, I'm totally focused on like the smaller stuff. It's funny, I had the triplex I bought. There were tenants in there who were long-term, so I got a small taste of that. And they were great, like the greatest tenant I will probably ever have. Like, she was amazing. She paid like 3 months early. She was there to help with anything in the property. So I liked that side. It's just like I can get 3 times more money using my strategy. So that's that. But no, I think my strategy will definitely evolve, definitely for like this year, 2024. I know for a fact, I'll stick with the stuff that I'm doing. But over time, my strategy will definitely transition because another downside is it's probably the most active. Short-term and mid-term are probably the most active, or at least a lot more active than a long-term rental. So I'll get to a point where I'm like, all right, like it's a lot of work to push the needle, to like almost put in sweat equity or sweat whatever to get these bigger numbers. So there'll definitely be a point where I'm like, all right, I'm ready to just diversify a little bit, but not there yet.
No, I love it. And you said it's very active, and you had 6 properties while you were a junior in college. How were you able to manage college, frat, and these properties?
I dropped out. that is true, and that is definitely part of it. But I would say the reason why I was able to do it even before then is I was For a college kid in a fraternity, I was extremely disciplined. I like didn't go out much. Like I went out, but I didn't go out much. I would just pick and choose like what events I wanted to go to. I knew like I only had one shot in college. I only had one college experience, so I wanted to like get the most of it. But at the same time, definitely disciplined enough to where like I put my stuff first and then found some time to do the other stuff. And then the second thing is, when I was in college, I didn't own properties just myself. So I had other people to rely on who could do the things that like I couldn't do.
No, I love this. And also, like, you're 23, you haven't really lived life yet. You know, you've already lived that college experience, but there's a lot of life ahead of you, of course. So what's your 10-year goal right now? Or what's your goal with real estate in general?
Yeah, the 10-year goal, so I'll be 33. It is so tough to even like think about it. I'll say one thing that I look at like on a daily basis, that's probably something that's like just distracting me at this point, but it definitely, I mean, I don't need that to keep me going, but I'm looking at private jets on a daily basis and I'm nowhere close. I am not even like in the close to even leasing one or chartering one for an hour. But if we're talking 10 years, I definitely want to be able to have the opportunity to have a private jet. But really what I'm focused on in like the short term is just cash flow. That's like the only metric that I personally care about at the moment, because I know that the cash flow will help me just buy more and more properties. So right now, between the three properties I own, it's bringing in roughly $7,000 per month in cash flow, about $11,000 to $12,000 in gross rents. So my goal by the end of 2024 is I want to get that number to at least $15,000 per month. Really shooting for $20,000. It's definitely a little bit of a stretch, but I know I can get there. But at least doubling where I'm at now would be the goal.
No, it's definitely attainable. And where do you see like the 2024 market headed to? There's a lot of people right now who are hesitant with buying just due to the uncertainty. So are you letting this uncertainty stop you, or is your approach to getting deals are different now?
No, like my mindset is like, I couldn't say this before because I didn't really understand, but like I really believe that let me start with this. The interest rates at my properties that I bought previously are 8.5%. Some of them are a little bit less, but if we were going to average out 8.5%. So interest rates don't scare me anymore, because I know that I can always refinance when they go down. They haven't gone down significantly enough for me to actually refinance, but as far as like the market goes, like I think this is a great time to buy. Like I don't see any major downside to buying now, because I think a lot of people are sitting on the sidelines. And just looking back in hindsight, in my very short window of experience, when interest rates were low, that is when competition was like through the roof. Like it was insane when people were going crazy. Now
you've finally broken loose from work. Three friends, one tea time, and then the text. Honey, there's water in the basement. Not exactly how you pictured your Saturday. That's when you call us, Cincinnati Insurance. We always answer the call, because real protection means showing up, even when things are in the rough. Cincinnati Insurance. Let us make your bad day better. Find an agent at CINFIN.com.
That interest rates are on the higher end of what they've been in the past couple of years. I've just seen a lot more people wait. So I think there's plenty of opportunity now. What I'm doing personally is I'm just stacking cash, and then gonna blow it all on a property and then start the process over again.
No, I got you. And this next question might be a little tough for you since you're only 23, but you have a lot of knowledge now. You have multiple properties. You have 7,000 net that you're bringing in a month. With the knowledge that you have now and what you know, if you were to start all over again, you know, as a 21-year-old in college, would you do anything differently? And if you would, what would you do?
Yeah, I mean, I always say like I wouldn't do anything differently, because I wouldn't be where I'm at if I didn't have the experiences I had. But if I were to go back, the biggest thing that I now know for like the journey I want to be on is, I think the most important thing that's overlooked is the piece about making money to then invest in real estate. For me, when I started out, I was more on board with like partnering with people and raising money and stuff like that. I mean, I did that for the six properties, my mindset's shifted, and it's honestly my personality type, honestly, that fits with this, is I'm more of a solo guy, and I realize, like, some people would rather have a smaller slice of a bigger pie, and I'm like, I think I could get farther that way, but I think I want just the entire pie, even if it's smaller. And I had experience with partners in multifamily, in real estate when I bought those properties. I've had a business partner too in other just like business ventures. I just like came to a realization that I like working by myself. I have like a virtual assistant, so it's not just me doing everything. I'll give her the tasks I really don't like to do, but I realize I like to run it lean. So going on with that, one thing that is like the most important piece is capital. So like if I can go back and tell myself, hey, this is gonna be so super important, I would have said make as much money, like pick something where you're just gonna make as much money as you possibly can. That way you can funnel that into real estate. I kind of got into real estate not really understanding how much money you need if you're not gonna partner with people. So that was a little blind maybe. But yeah, that's kind of my thoughts on it.
No, I love that you said that. And the main reason why is because I transitioned from single family to multifamily because I was able to scale more, right? Mm-hmm. But to scale more, as you said, you get a smaller percentage of a bigger piece of pie. So in theory that, you know, a smaller percentage could possibly be more than that single family that you have. But now you have more opinions and now you have, it's almost like a job where whenever you want to do something or if you have an idea, you just can't do it. You have to ask permission. So that definitely makes sense. And I agree with you as well. I would say you can make more money faster and get more cash flow faster with these smaller properties since everything is yours. But what do you want to do? It's a lot more active, right? You said that, you know, it's very active on your plate with the midterm rentals. But you like that, and you have these goals. And I love the jet thing also, because I don't know if you've ever flown the plane, but I have, and I want to get my private pilot's license. And have you heard of Meet Kevin, by chance?
Yeah.
So he's the one that got me to wanting to buy a private jet as well. And he got one for $250,000. And that's not cheap, don't get me wrong, but that's a house, though, right? So if you avoid getting a property and just get the jet, it's possible. But don't forget the hangar fees and all the maintenance. Yeah. I think the maintenance is what gets you. But this conversation is great, and I think the audience can love everything that you're saying. What do you think is one of the major reasons why new investors or people who are curious in real estate don't get into it?
Yep. I've seen a lot of people that I know who talk about it for a while, they don't get in. The reasons that I've seen is they don't have a long-term mindset, and like what scares them is everything right now. And again, this took time to develop, so it's like I partially understand, but it's like if you focus too much on right now, then yeah, like you could think, well, I don't really know, it's gonna be an election year, and then this, and then interest rates, and this. So when you start overthinking everything, I could totally see a million reasons why you wouldn't get in now. But then if you look at the other side, you can see a million reasons why you would get in. So instead of debating all these different reasons, you just have to know that real estate has been proven over a long period of time, not overnight. You're not gonna just make $1 million the day after you buy the property. And if you buy a sweet deal and that happens, you're not gonna actually see those gains for a little while, which is totally okay. But just having that long-term approach, I've seen people get way too nervous about what's going to happen in the short term. And in my opinion, and my philosophy is, if you're going to hold the property for the long term, then sure, things can still go wrong, but the risk is way lower. So I don't really get emotionally attached to the properties. I just have this long-term approach where I'm like, all right, like, I might not have the best month. I might not have the best week with the property. I might have to fix this, but like in the long term, it's gonna work out. So I think people just overthink markets and stuff like that. And then I don't know. I think that's like the biggest thing that I've seen from people, at least. It's like timing and just like
Oh, for sure. And I think the overthinking comes with thinking of all the risks that can happen. It's risky. I think a lot of people think real estate is risky. You've been in real estate for a while now. What's been the riskiest thing that's happened to you to date with real estate?
Craziest thing, like I had to replace either the sewer lines or one of the plumbing pipes in one of my properties, and it was like $2,000 or $3,000, and it wiped out cash flow for like a month and a half, maybe 2 months. So like that was a bummer, but it's fixable. Like you got a plumber to put in new pipes, and now those pipes are gonna be great for the next a lot of time. So like that was probably the biggest unexpected repair that I've had to do. Besides that, and I'm sure there'll be more unexpected repairs. Like it's gonna happen. That's why you gotta set aside some money for those types of things. But nothing like crazy, to be honest. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the reason why I asked, right? Like everything is risky at the end of the day, right? Not just real estate, stocks, crypto, bonds, whatever. Like they're even the most secure things to be risky at some point, just because we can't control everything. That's just what it is. But if you focus on like you have been doing what you can control, then better things will happen along the way. And it sounds like you had some kind of a mindset shift from whenever you got started to now. You just had a $2,000-$3,000 plumbing issue and you wiped that cash flow for a month, right? You don't plan on holding it for 2 to 3 months, so that's right. I would say is minuscule. What has been the biggest mindset shift you've had since getting into real estate, and how has it affected your real estate career, also your life?
I would say, man, there's so many different mindset shifts in a lot of different realms. I would say, man, a lot of different things. I would say one of the biggest ones is once you get a little taste of cash flow, a little taste of success, you kind of, like, one of my shifts was, like, I was like, wow, I could really, like, hit these, like, certain goals with, X amount of properties. And if I only need, so right now I have, like, three properties, and I needed to put up like roughly $90,000 in equity to close on each property, furnish and whatever. So I'm like, all right, if I can put up $90,000 and get this cash flow in return, and now use that cash flow to buy more properties, I can kind of start to like map out and really see like where it can actually take me. So just being able to like actually understand it. Cause when you look back and you take a step back or when I was brand new, I didn't really understand the exact of like how much people are actually making with real estate and like how it actually compounds over time and all that stuff. So now that I'm in it, just like understanding it more and knowing like the, like seeing the power of it play out, that's been like a huge shift. And then another thing too, kind of going back to what you said before, something I've done is I used to like kind of want to hear people's opinions on like, oh, if they thought this was a good deal or like whatever. And now like it literally, and it used to phase me a little bit. Like I used to second guess myself a little bit. If they said, oh, well, I don't really know. Now, if someone gives me some red flags, and again, maybe this is naive or whatever. And what I'm talking about is more like family, friends. If it's somebody who's in the field or in that market, like I'll listen. But if it's someone that has no business and nothing in the business, when they say something like, I don't know, that's like my signal that I'm 100% doing something right. Because everyone's going to tell, like everyone, whenever I buy a property or before I close on it, everyone's throwing out like, oh, what about this, about this? Whenever I close on a property and let people know how much money it's bringing in, there's no more negative talk. So that's another like personal thing that I've shifted is if someone tells me something, oh, this is risky, be careful of this, I'm like, all right, I definitely am doing something right, because the majority of people aren't buying real estate. I know, to me, I think that's a great thing to do.
I think Kanye said it as well, just like with money in general, like some guy giving him money advice when he has millions more. Why would you take advice from someone? Why would you take advice from someone who has no idea what they're talking about? Or not even close to where you are? Like I said, you're 23, you have more properties than me, and you have valid experience. So I think people should listen to you because of that. And that's going to lead to our next segment of the show. What are the two books that you read, or what are the two books that you recommend an aspiring investor to read?
For sure. I mentioned Rich Dad Poor Dad before. I'd 100% recommend that book. And then, there's a lot of good books. The Go Giver is one of the books that just popping in my head right now that I really like. Not necessarily focused on real estate, but I think it all kind of plays into each other. So I'll say The Go Giver and Rich Dad Poor Dad.
What is the most impactful speech or lesson that helped you in your real estate career?
Most impactful speech or lesson that has impacted my real estate career?
That's could have been really from a book or, yeah. You know, a meetup that you did. Could be anything.
Yeah, totally. I would say there's like so many, like, it's hard to pinpoint one, because I'll tell you that every conversation that I have, it leads me to a new idea and a new strategy. Like, one that's sticking out to me that I just like remember hearing about it, and then I remember like just my mind was blown, and it was something I'd never heard of before. And maybe to you and other people it's not that crazy, but I remember I was listening to a podcast, this was years ago, from a guy named, like, I think his name's Spencer, I honestly forgot his last name. I know he's based in California, and he was basically talking about the funds of fund model. And at the time, I didn't know much about real estate, and I didn't know all the different ways you can make money. So when I heard like this idea of like the funds of fund model, or like all these different asset classes, it just, and I haven't done it, and right now honestly I don't want to, but just opening my eyes and knowing that there's like a million ways to actually make money in this business was probably like the biggest opener for me. And I just remember like this guy Spencer talking about it, because I was like, oh my god, I didn't even know that was a possibility. Oh my god, I didn't even know this was a possibility. So that's just kind of opened my eyes to knowing like there isn't just one good path to take, there's a million paths, and as long as you're in real estate, you're on a good path.
No, that's right. And even within real estate, there's, I mean, you've already named like four or five different things that you've done, so the options are limitless. Third question: if you could have dinner with anybody, dead or alive, who would it be and why?
That's a good question. I would probably say, like, to me, I would need somebody with like a big vision, because I think that's hard to conceptualize. So like, I would say like, I mean, modern day, like, I feel like Elon Musk has had like crazy visions that people are like, you're stupid for doing this. And then like 10 years later, it's like normal now. So like, I'd say modern day, like an Elon Musk. But I would say if I had to go back in time, it would be like either like the Vanderbilts or one of those big families who just ran the show. Yeah, exactly. So I would say like I forget if it's the Vanderbilts or a different family who owns like
Carnegie or, maybe.
I don't know, but
Carnegie, was that Steel?
Yeah, there's a couple of those families that like I would just want to know like what's going through their mind, and yeah, have a good dinner with them.
Amazing. And how can the audience reach you if they want to ask you questions, or if they want to look into your business and see what you're doing? What's the best route for that?
Best route, Instagram, that's the easiest. And then you can also, if you're a YouTube guy, I've been posting a ton of content on there too. So you can just look up my name on YouTube or Instagram.
Well, great, Bailey. Well, thank you so much for joining the show, and hope to have you again soon.
Yeah, nice catching up with you.
That was Bailey, everybody. At the beginning of the podcast, I told you I'd give you three actionable steps to help you get 1% closer to your goal of buying your next real estate investment. Before then, please like and subscribe, and give me comments if you like this podcast. I'm continuously trying to get better, so everything that you do means the world to me. Step one, Bailey said that he focuses on midterm rentals. So for you, look up Furnish Finder and kind of see what the rates are in the area that you live in, right? If you want to see kind of an idea of what you can make a little bit more than a long-term rental, Furnish Finder is a great place to start. Number two, come up with another goal, right? I've said this from other podcasts. Your goals are very important, and make shorter goals. So determine what you want to do by the end of the year. It can be save up for a down payment. It can be reach out to 10 realtors. It could be build a funnel of people that you can go reach out to as resources that you can always rely on. It can be anything you want, but make a goal for the end of 2024 and act on those goals and do the actionable steps it takes to get there. And number three, Bailey likes to do things alone. He doesn't like to have as many partners. So if that's you, reach out to Bailey and figure out how he's doing it and just learn from him, right? And if you're not, if you want to scale a little bit faster, reach out to me. I'm always going to be here through email, phone, on my site, gobanaequity.com. Don't be afraid to do so. Until next time, see you next Wednesday.
At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.
You've finally broken loose from work. Three friends, one tea time, and then the text. Honey, there's water in the basement. Not exactly how you pictured your Saturday. That's when you call us, Cincinnati Insurance. We always answer the call, because real protection means showing up, even when things are in the rough. Cincinnati Insurance. Let us make your bad day better. Find an agent at CINFIN.com.